Okay.
All right. Well, we'll get started then. Just after 5, so I'll call the meeting to order. And if I could get a motion to approve last committee meeting minutes.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
A second. All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Very good. All righty. Well, welcome everybody. It's good to see everybody back again. You know, hopefully we can start doing this in person. It looks like maybe on
here comes Laura.
On our June session, we'll be able to get together, which will be good. I'll start feeling normal again. So with that said, we have a couple of guests with us this evening, and I want to welcome Barbara Hall. She's a constituent of legislator Uchitel, and he wanted to give her an opportunity to share her thoughts on the county's mental health, I guess some of the issues that we're having, and share her thoughts and ideas on how to, you know, get it moving maybe in the right direction and, you know, fill some of the gaps that need to be filled. So with that said, I don't know, Legislator, you should tell if you want to add anything to that or introduce her, or if we should just, you know, open the floor.
Yeah.
For her presentation.
Yeah, but I'll just say that Barbara is more than just a constituent on this topic, and more than just someone that deals with it, but has a lot of experience dealing with it. And based on my conversation with her, I felt that it would benefit the committee, just as any, you know, as any constituent could come, but also just in particular after talking to her, I wanted to make sure that we gave her some time at the start of the meeting.
Sure.
So Barbara, if you would take it away, the floor is yours.
Okay. I'm going to do the Cliff Notes version. I know some of you know me already. I know Peter, Laura for years, Michael for a gazillion years. And I sent my resume because I do that because I have a lot of that systems experience, and I've worked exactly in some of the organizations that are contracted agencies. I think my first gig at the county was at Department of Social Services. I ran a youth and family initiative. That's how I met Michael. That was over 20 years ago. So I've been on the all kinds of levels. I've been in the health system. I did work at Westchester Medical Center, worked on some of the funding they got for the whole hospital project. I was working on the Healthy Village project. Actually interviewed a lot of the local agencies for that project. That was back in 2015. Hasn't happened yet, but we hope it will. I worked at a regional consortium of 30 behavioral health organizations. Some of them are contracted agencies. Access Supports for Living started that IPA. I'm working now a little bit pro bono, some with Family Services, doing an innovative project over in Poughkeepsie, integrating health, mental health, and substance use services, and having a full service pharmacy. So that would be in concert, you know, it would be it's a $3 million capital grant, and that's coming along really well. Also, I worked at Hudson Valley Mental Health, and I worked on transitioning from the county mental health services to that organization. So that was another thing I've been involved with. I guess what I'm here about is I'm also a family caregiver. And I have a brother who has, who's a person with schizoaffective disorder. He's got several health issues. You know, he's obese. He's got high cholesterol, high blood pressure, severe sleep apnea, 10 medications, et cetera. He's tried hooking him up with just about every service in the county. And it's been very challenging. I mean, I'm sure you see family caregivers show you the files and the piles and, I did every housing application I possibly could when my partner didn't want him living with us anymore. I had to go through, what's the definition of homeless? There's like 5 different definitions in the county. So that was enlightening. It's a real challenge to have worked in the health field and mental health field for like over maybe 45 years. And we're still talking about integrating health and behavioral health services. I am quite a good navigator of services. I do make a great care manager. And it does take a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. I have tried to figure out how to get more input as a family caregiver to the system. I did serve on the Ulster County Community Services Board for a while. Laura, you got your hand up?
I mean, it's interesting that you're saying this and you know how to navigate the system. And I don't. And we just had a crisis with a family friend. Why is our system broken? Or is that too broad of a question? I mean, we have funding coming. How do we fix it so you don't have to have a PhD or a master's in mental health in our system? I think that's my question as I'm listening to you speak, because I've known you for many years and this is your background and that in grant writing. I mean, how do you not have to be a professional to navigate the system and to get appropriate care for, folks in need?
Well, that's why I got reactivated when I saw the county task force that was assembled, and then I didn't see anybody representing family caregivers except for those organizations that do have an awareness of that. That I got all reactivated, and I am interested in giving input to where I see the gaps are. Yes, I have a social work degree, and I have a master's in public health administration and an undergraduate. And I'm mystified that as recently as the past few weeks, I'm still completely shocked at the treatment my brother and I have received from contracted agencies. And so I don't know what to say, but about that, Laura, I mean, that's, $1 million question. I just don't want to give up trying to, passing along what I know. And I know Michael Berg's on the call, so it's hard to even speak because Michael's been in the bowels of this too. And I think I think, one thing I said to Michael maybe 2 years ago, I said, Michael, what I like about you is you're always thinking out of the box. And then he turned to me and he said, what box? And I think that says something. And I want to give kudos to Family Woodstock. I mean, not just because you're here, Michael, but because it's how organizations have to scrap together services, because if there's no reimbursement for them, how do they survive? How do they provide the care? So where do you get the money? So it's always kind of trying to catch up. And so I guess how to spend my time, because I had just a few minutes, but I did send this slide, and it's the social determinants of health, right? And we all know what that means, sort of. It's getting more and more press. Hallelujah. But, you know, so my brother, I look at him and he looks very old and he's younger than me. And on average, people with mental health challenges live 25 years
less
than others. So I'm watching him deteriorate, regardless of the fact that I have all these degrees and I know the system in and out, and I know executive directors of agencies, and I've been through SPO, you know, on and on. So if 20% of a person's well-being or health is from healthcare and these services we're trying to coordinate, that's great. But 80% are their health behaviors and their physical environment, like housing or, you know, money, jobs. So I'm coordinating all of that for my brother. You know, it's like, it's a full-time job and it has an impact in my career profoundly, as well as my own mental health. So, yeah, it's very intense to do that and to see, to be present for organizations that are lobbying to do a certain kind of service. And then on the ground, I know how my brother's just been treated by that same organization. And as recently as the past few weeks, I've been an hour on the phone with one of the executive directors. No feedback loop to the input I had, not getting back to me. It's hard. It's hard. And that's somebody who is a colleague who I knew from some of my work at Westchester Medical Center regionally. So it's, I want to, you know, I have some, I didn't want to go on about my experiences because in 10 minutes, it's hard to reveal that. It's very emotional for me, as you can tell. I would like to be able to get, you know, I also have a lot of ideas and solutions. And just to say, not only have I worked in community engagement in seven counties regarding community-based organizations, but my wife, Rachel, just she worked for the Montefiore Health System for 5 years doing a similar thing. She's also a family caregiver to my brother. So, and I want to say one really positive thing is I did find out who the consultant is on the mental health task force. And I feel like you're in good hands, everybody, because Kristen Woodlock is a rock star, the woman who will be the consultant. So I almost feel like when I heard that today or when I learned that, that I was like, oh, I can step back and say, you're in good hands. And I feel like she knows a lot of these gaps that I would speak to. But, and I would still like to have input into that task force, and I would like to attend if I could possibly be invited. Albert.
Yeah. Hi. I'm sorry.
Am I allowed to call on people or Craig?
No, that's fine. You know, I don't see everybody at once. So, okay. You know, if somebody, just speak up. If you want to say something, you know, just hop in there because I can't see everybody at the same time. Well, actually, I don't even know how you're able to do that. Are you able to get everybody on the screen at the same time?
Is gallery view, Craig, up in the top right-hand corner of your screen.
Okay.
So, Barbara, first of all, my name is Al Bruno. I'm a legislator for District 2, which is Saugerties. I've read your resume prior to the meeting. Thank you for forwarding that. It gave me a very good insight in you, and I'm actually in awe in everything that you've accomplished, to be quite honest with you. And I guess I want to expand a little bit on Laura's statement slash question is, if you had a list of 10 things, I mean, on the task force, personally, I think you actually belong in that task force. I think there's people that belong in the task force that should be on there. I think there's people that don't belong in that task force that shouldn't be on there. But that's just we can go round and round that forever. But my point is, if you had a list based on your experiences and your professional experiences and not only with your brother, but also where you're coming from, you had a list like three things that we as Ulster County, as a government, can change to make that process easier. I mean, what would be the top three things that we can do?
I think for me, as a family giver, caregiver, and working in the system, is all the years I've tried to come up with, what are the referral systems? Like, where do you get the best referrals, and how do you close the loop on that referral? Because that's the gap. It's fine. You have, like, the county, there's like 2 million referral lists. And that's where I have to be the care manager, is finding which list has the best information on it. Now, again, to Michael, Michael's got the longest running hotline in the United States going on over there. So they have a great resource list. And actually the best they ever saw was they used Family of Woodstock's thing.
Do you think it would make sense to have one organization?
Excuse me?
Do you think it would make sense to have one organization,
well,
one list and one system, as opposed to multiple systems and multiple contractors and multiple organizations trying to do the same thing? Not to mention the efficiency of it all.
Yes, and I would like to see... There are products, like the whole state of Pennsylvania and the whole has adopted a certain referral product, and then they link it to the whole health information exchange. The whole state of Arizona, so there's these pilots going on. It does not having that available where people can see the resources and everybody, it's available to everyone, does not take away the warm handouts and real people like what our on the ground CBO, like the LGBTQ center provides or Michael provides. It doesn't take that away, but I agree. I just went on the, one website. How would I know if I'm in crisis to call? I look at Wellness Recovery website. I look at this one. I look at that one. I get confused about what the best list is, Al, and maybe each one has a little bit better, more specificity, but yeah. So that actually is my top thing. And the other thing I'm finding lately is, as much as there's different agencies and I hook my brother up with this peer and that peer and this one and that one, people move on. So he develops a relationship. He already has a hard time. That's part of his mental health challenges, is he doesn't know how to reach out. He's not assertive. He doesn't know how to call. He's used to stopping by. He doesn't know how to make appointments. So he can't do that this past year, but even before that. But there's turnover. It's a staff market. People are moving on. So training, retention, more money for staff. You've heard that over and over, right?
Yeah.
So is this about more caseworkers and trying to figure out getting more caseworkers connected with clients and trying to have them have long-term relationships with the clients?
Yeah, if I could jump in here. And that's kind of what I've learned over the years. I don't know how many people know the details of my background, but I got hurt when I was 18 years old. It was almost 30 years ago, I've learned a lot over the years. I've learned how difficult the system is to navigate. And what I have learned as well is that the system is completely overloaded. It's completely overloaded. These caseworkers have hundreds of clients and people that they're dealing with on their own. So they don't, and what I've noticed is that they often don't have the time to spend with an individual, make aware, what's available for them. You're often playing phone tag. People don't get back to you. I don't know how many times I've spent, hours on hold only to be hung up on at the, I didn't get an answer. And it's playing phone tag. It's all in part, because of how overwhelmed the system is. And I think that's where a lot of these changes have to begin. Yeah. I don't know if it's having more people available, to provide that one-on-one time or just some time to spend, with an individual to explain to them what's available out there. And then it's just layer and layer of bureaucracy on top of each other as well. There's so many rules out there. I guess it's like a full-time job, just knowing what you're entitled to, what's available, and how to go about getting it. And if I wasn't able to advocate for myself, you know, I feel really bad for people who are unable to do it, because they're the ones that get lost in the system. And there's so many people that are lost in the system because, you know, they just don't have the time, and they don't have the manpower. And, yeah, I just think that that's in part, you know, the answer that we're looking for. You know, it's you need
more. Almost sounds like an argument for shared services, where we need to put everything under one umbrella and have some kind of cohesive. This is, and I'll just use the term, this is the mental health department of Ulster County, and they handle everything. Yes, they can utilize the tools at their disposal, such as family and access and all of those, but you need to have the buck stops here. You need to have somebody in charge in a hierarchy. And then the caseworkers at the bottom, on the front line.
Can I ask you, and I think that Barbara made reference to it before. There isn't an integration of service.
Right.
There are mental health services. There are substance abuse services. There are criminal justice services. People are struggling with health services. But they're whole people, and they're dealing with all of those issues, but they're having to go to different places. The way that our system is structured, and if you look at the list of funding sources that I sent to all of you, you will see that in order to present a whole service, I'm writing four or five different funding sources and separating out when I, this hour I did this and this hour I did this, but they're whole people. And so, you know, what you were saying, Craig, about the complexity, our caseworkers serve to be that resource for people as they go to the multiple, because they don't know and they don't understand what they're told. And so what happens is that you need somebody to navigate the system for the person to get service. I would like to add one more thing that Barbara said, which is so disturbing. The amount of turnover at places like Astor and the mental health services is tremendous now. But let me tell you what that means. It means that I have a kid or an adult who has a therapy session, and the next week, the person isn't the same. So they start to tell their story all over again. And then 2 weeks later, it's a different person. At what point do you give up and say, this is a waste of time? Without that stability, I mean, we're talking therapy. We're talking counseling. If the person doesn't even know you, you don't have any trust in that circumstance. So these are the situations that Barbara and many, many, many of us are confronting every day. And it's built around the fact that funding is done by legislators who isolate a particular problem and put money to it. But the problem is part of a bigger issue, a bigger situation. And so to compartmentalize the money makes it very hard to provide a comprehensive service unless you're prepared to write six grants to put the money together to provide a comprehensive service. It's a lot of work.
Michael, can I ask you a question? And
of course.
I'm learning. Thank you, guys, both of you. But like you mentioned a few other states, like Arizona, I heard, and a few other states that have different systems. Is there a particular model that maybe Ulster County can use, or possibly New York State, as it were, that we could model off of, give us a goal, something that we can work towards? Do you know of a particular place that's done differently than the way we do it and how we could possibly change it?
Not in the funding sources that I work in. The state compartmentalizes. We have to respond. We may know what the service that's needed. I'm sure Barbara could tell you an hour's worth of time of what her brother needs. but finding an integrated space that could be done by one group is very, very hard. And the funding does not support that. Barbara, go ahead.
Well, Al, I don't know if you'll have an opportunity, but Kristen Woodlock, who is the consultant, I believe, to the Mental Health Task Force, has so much experience. And she's worked regionally. Her husband's really well known. I'm a fan of both of them. She knows what's going on regionally, but she's also from the National Council on Behavioral Health Care. She's a national consultant. And she's great at bringing organizations together and looking at workflows. Now, workflows means she's paying attention to where the gaps are and how to make sure before people get funding, they know, like, somebody shouldn't get funding to do a program if it's not seamlessly connected to the next organizations, you know? So she's very aware of that. I get a little emotional about this. She also knows family caregiver issues. And even like her husband runs a facility down in East New York, which is like premier. He talks about it all the time, all over. They not only have the person's total health, as Michael's talking about, in their system, they consider generational health, because it's like the family the person comes from and even before that. So they try to link in the whole family. I mean, that's deep. So the Woodlocks have really, I mean, they're not the answer to everything, but I'm so heartened to learn it. Peter.
Yeah, Barbara, you and I had this conversation before about, at one point, mental health was a little bit more coordinated under the county, and then it got separated out. So what was the dysfunction that was happening on the county level that caused it to be separated out? Because what Al's kind of calling for is for it to be brought back in again, whether it's under the county or it's under one kind of larger, you know, entity.
Peter?
Well, some of that is Michael's speaking.
We now have seven.
Are you speaking, Mike?
I'm trying to say that our mental health department used to have large numbers of employees. Now they have seven. So when you start to look at what happened, the leadership, we used to be able to go to mental health when we needed a special service. We can't do that now. They don't have it to provide. The state has removed a lot of the resources, including taking the rehab and detox and putting it in Dutchess County. It's hard to make up.
Yeah. Sorry, I just had dinner with a friend of mine who used to be at the county, Cheryl Kumar, before all the decimation of, you know, the reimbursement streams. Somewhat we went to a county executive form of governance. But yeah, there's a lot of pressures on why the mental health department isn't the way it is. It's I don't even know what to say. Other counties are also struggling too. They've had to do the same thing with their mental health services, contract them out to a private nonprofit. It's happening a lot. So yes, that's unfortunate. Other counties are scrapping it together too. I was heartened to see, okay, so there's some money coming into the county. How can that money be used in a way that is given to sustainable projects and maybe is some infrastructure in terms of information systems? So yes, I know everybody wants to right away plug the holes because of the hospital beds being moved to Poughkeepsie. So yes, I understand crisis treatment is really important. The opioid crisis is definitely important. And the mental health issues are continuing to be very prominent. And I just looked it up, but I think the enrollment in Medicaid has gone through the roof this past year. So we have that burden too going on. So there's a lot to consider here. I mean, it's no easy. I just am so heartened by who's at the table, that this task force is being convened. It's sad it hasn't been this kind of a task force, or they used to call it the providers meeting, has not been convened over the past few years. I do not know why it has not been. So I guess the county exec has to do this kind of thing. And there's money. So I hope it's used wisely.
So yeah, I got a question for actually for both of them. Sorry, I'm asking a lot of questions because I'm learning here. And I hope everybody else is too.
But it's about
this. Do you think this is indicative of what New York State has done? Closing all the, I'll use for lack of better terms, the institutions because of a bad one that happened in Long Island. They seem to have shut down all the mental health institutions like the Mid-Hudson Center, the Orange County Center, all these huge institutions were closed down. And it seems, which is back in the 70s and the 80s, and it seems it's been a constant like degradation of the system since then. In my opinion, and if I'm wrong, then I am. Maybe we need to get back to some kind of a central location like that again, is what I'm getting at. Some kind of a service like that.
Al, you're going deep. That's deep. Maybe, but Michael,
I mean, I think outside the box.
I think that the problem with the institutions that you were describing was that they put people away. And as humanity and looking at the systems occurred, people recognized that we were putting the problem in the corner, so we didn't have to deal with it. And we weren't necessarily providing quality service to the people that we were serving. But it hasn't gotten to the point where the quality of service that we can deliver in the community responds to the needs while still giving some freedom and some ability to do what they want to do within their lives. That's a real challenge when people are not functional.
We need to find something in the middle.
In terms of housing and in terms of a lot of the services that we provide. But it's really a challenge. You know, there are systems that say you have to give the apartment to the person that's the most at need, the most at risk, the most in danger. But if that person's not ready for service, the apartment gets trashed. Then the landlord doesn't want to do business with you. So there has to be some understanding and some trust and communication between the providers that are in the front line and the people that are making decisions that are so far away from the front line.
I could, Craig, if I could just speak on this one issue, it's really very similar to like in the education world, what happened with No Child Left Behind, right? Like there was no funding associated with it. So we think that society as a whole has said, we don't want to put people and lock them up in institutions, but we're not willing to provide the federal dollars behind what that means. So oftentimes people end up homeless or in other situations where they are what Barbara's talking about. And people also have a choice. And so we can, as a mental health department, find what we believe is the best solution for somebody, and they can turn it down, and they have a choice to, they have a choice of where they go.
They have that right.
Right. But they may not want the services that we're providing. So I'll give you an example, CHISs, right? And there's been a lot of communication around CHISs. There's still about 10 to 20 people in CHISs that we could potentially find placement for, but that would require them going to group meetings or having other services provided to them that they aren't interested in having provided to them. So they decline those services, and we're in a situation where we have 10 to 20 people who still need a place to live. They have a right to a place to live. We don't have a, and we can only place them where we believe is a place that matches with what their needs are.
We need someplace in the middle.
Yeah, well, you know, my brother did live in Chiz's place for a while, so that was quite an experience, let's put it that way. But I think that, I forget what I was going to say. I got distracted by that. It's so huge for me. It's like, I think this matters to me more than just about any category of things in my life. I feel so passionate about this. I mean, this is what I put my life's work in, both professionally and then, oh, I know what I was going to say. My brother would be dead if it weren't for me. You know what I mean? Let's say how many times I have scooped him up. He was in a locked ward in East Orange, New Jersey. I mean, I've never seen anything like it. My wife, thank God, agreed to bring him up here and cobble together whatever we've cobbled together. But it's, I have to say that I adore my brother and any of you, and the peer movement says nothing about him without him. He should really be here on this call. So I don't like to do that to him, because it's a little hard for him to see how passionate his sister is. But that's it. So I want to hear.
If one thing's for certain, Barbara, is that you bring a lot to this committee. You obviously have a lot of experience and you're a wealth of knowledge and you know what you've done and how you've learned. You know, to advocate for your brother. And we would like to have you back, you know, in our committee, you know, and have further discussions. I think, yeah, you bring a lot to the table, and I think we can only benefit as a committee with your experience and, you know, your ideas, and, you know, maybe we can start coming up with solutions on how best to, you know, fill these gaps and, you know, move the county, you know, forward and identifying the changes that have to be met and how to go about doing it. So, you know, with that said, you know, I really appreciate you being here today, and you know, we should definitely stay in touch and, you know, have you back and continue this discussion.
Mark, are you listening?
So I don't know what you, Craig, are you talking about? Are you talking about me participating on the task force or this group, or I'm not sure exactly.
Yeah, well, no, you can come
the forum.
Yeah, well, you can come back and speak with our committee. I don't have control over the task force. That would be
over 30 people on the task force, and there are other individuals who do represent. I mean, before talking to Barbara at the Community Services Board, we had sent out an invitation to NAMI, and there's others. Look, there's people that aren't on the Behavioral Health Task Force, Barbara being one of them. In an ideal world, if we could have 100 people, they would all be there. But it's already a very, very lengthy, robust task force. And at this point, we're leaving the membership as it is. Now, Barbara's talked to several members of the task force and advocated on her own behalf and are informing them of things to bring to that table. And we've provided her with the information from the last meeting. So,
yeah, it's just a very labor intensive process to do it that way, Mark. So I will continue because I feel so strongly. And, you know, like I'll reach out to Michael, I'll keep doing that. But it is harder because there is no tape of the meeting and there's no real minutes. There's just ideas. So it's hard to put it into any kind of context, but I will continue to do what I need to feel engaged and that I get my input in.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Barbara.
Thank you, Barbara.
Am I able to stay on to hear Michael's presentation?
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, Michael, you are under new business. I don't know if we want to buzz through resolutions, get that out of the way, and then have
you. If that's what you want, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, then we'll.
I got to jump off after the presentation, so I would.
Okay. Yep. No, definitely. All right. Well, we'll get into resolutions then. All right. We will start with resolution 246, confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board. Move for discussion.
Move that.
Second.
Any discussion? This is for Daniel Bliss. Hearing none.
Is this a reappointment?
No, we appointed him a couple months ago to the mental health subcommittee.
Yeah, I remember the name, that's what I was asking.
All of them.
Neuroscientist from UC Berkeley. He works at Fordham, but got his degree at Berkeley.
Nettie's saying all of them that we're going to see tonight are in the same? Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Can we
block them?
Can we block
them? As a group.
Yeah, but, it may take longer to block them than if we just buzz through them. So let's just buzz through them. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 247, confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board. Move for discussion.
Move it.
Second.
Again, it's for Denise Renhan. Is that how you pronounce that last name?
Rannigan.
Okay. All right. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 248, confirming the appointment of a member to the Community Service Board Substance Abuse Subcommittee. Move for discussion.
Move it.
Second. All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Move on to resolution 250, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute a memorandum of agreement with the Kingston City School District for the operation of a point of dispensing site at the Kate Walton Fieldhouse. I move for discussion.
I'll move.
Yep.
Yeah.
A second.
Any discussion?
This is for Mark. Is this for COVID inoculation?
It is.
For COVID vaccines, this has already actually happened. Kingston School District. Can you hear me?
Better.
The Kingston School District was going to submit for FEMA reimbursement on their own, but FEMA has told us that they can't do that. And so we are submitting, they're going to charge us and we're going to get reimbursed through FEMA because it's our pod.
Okay. So just for clarity, this is for the existing, what has already happened. This isn't a new.
Correct.
Thank you.
Anything else? All in favor?
So this is an additional or continuing.
It sounds like this is just moving it onto our books so that we can bill FEMA.
FEMA told us that we couldn't have them reimbursed about a month ago. So the whole time they were planning on submitting their own FEMA request, now we have to do it for them. And we have to have an MOU in order to do that.
More bureaucracy.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Resolution 251, authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Office of Children and Family Services for a mobile child advocacy center unit. Motion?
Move it.
Second. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mark, is this state money?
It is. And it's purchasing a trailer. It'll be like an RV that we'll be able to take out into the community and do interviews with child victims and others in a more comfortable place than them coming into the FCAC.
So this will be like the mobile DMV?
Correct. But for the Family and Child Advocacy Center. Right. Correct.
And do we already have this bus?
No. So originally, OCFS was going to just purchase this for us and donate it to us. And then throughout this grant, they decided that they were just going to provide us the money and we have to buy our own kit.
So this will be a bond issue as well?
Probably not, because we're receiving the money from, I don't think we'll bond this, because we're receiving the money directly from OCFS.
So it'll be a pass-through?
Correct.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around this, because I know, you know, very often if there is a child victim, rather than taking them into, you know, an office or a police station where it's very cold and uncomfortable, wouldn't it make more sense to have a room somewhere? I mean, are you saying they go to the site of where the crime happened? Or I'm just trying to wrap my head around the program. It just seems like some of these mobile programs mean we need more staffing, and, you know, what happens if that funding runs out? Is there a sunset on these folks? I feel like we're adding more layers.
Yeah. So we won't add staffing. This is just for the piece of equipment, and we will utilize our, you know, staffing that already exists. This gives people an opportunity to go out into the field and do the investigation. It won't be at the crime scene, but for people with transportation issues, if there's other reasons that the family doesn't want to travel to the center now, which is in Kingston, we can go out into the community and have a place that will be more comfortable and private, that we can interview victims.
So will this be planned, like, say Ellenville on a Tuesday, Saugerties on a Wednesday, or is it just random?
No, this would be us planning with the victim's family and the family, and we would go out and meet them at a location that works for them. But again, this is 100% state funded. This is a grant that I think they're providing to many of the counties with these Office of Victim Services, you know, domestic violence services programs. So
I'm not against it necessarily, yeah. But I'm just trying to wrap my head around it. It just seems to me, when this bus, I see this, you know, RV, so to speak, you know, pulling up into a town, and the people are looking at it and say, oh my God, you know, what a waste of money. You know what I'm saying? Because I get it. It's coming from state and federal, but that's taxpayer money as well. I have to think of that. I mean, I think it's a needed situation. I visualize a tragedy where there's, you know, multiple people that are involved, and this bus needs to go to whether it be a school or someplace where they need, you know, where you see a lot of times where there's a death for some whatever reason, and they offer counseling to the classes. I see that being the place that this would show up as. But going, you know, driving 150 miles because one person can't get a taxi to drive to Kingston almost seems a little bit of a waste. And that's what I'm trying to wrap my head around, and hopefully this doesn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, I'll read from the actual grant, where it says these units will allow for team members to choose a centrally located safe space to meet family and children right in their own community. Utilizing the mobile unit will increase accessibility to a child safe space and the services that will be then available to that child and their family. Ultimately, the increased accessibility will lend itself to reducing the trauma for these child victims and beginning the healing process earlier. So it's really about just being able to, it's not about just them coming into town and it's about being able to go to them and being in a less traumatic situation.
My question with this is kind of going to go to Michael and Barbara Hill as well. Do you see the outright need for this, Michael? I mean, you guys, Family of Woodstock does incredible work, and I'm just, you know, so I would kind of put more credence into your services as well, because they're all over. They're everywhere in the county that I know of. So is this redundant to what family does and that we're paying family for?
It's not redundant to what we do, because the county itself has to do this work because there's been an abuse situation. They're studying the safety of the family. I think that having a safe, comfortable place to do these kind of interviews would be welcomed by the family and the child. I also have some of the same feelings that you do about, you're going to spend $30,000, $40,000 on a vehicle? I could have a staff person with that. But there is reason for it. And if done well, it can really help a very difficult situation be better.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We will move on to Resolution 252, approving the execution of the contract for $73,511 entered into by the county with the family of Woodstock for the is that Roman numerals, the XX, that 20 domestic violence program?
Title 20, Title 20 domestic violence.
Gotcha. All right. Move for discussion.
Second.
Any discussion? All right. Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 253, approving execution of a contract for $200,000 with J&D Ultra Care Group for a preschool nurse attended. Motion? Al, motion, second. All right, discussion?
Preschool nurse? Can't hear
you, Mom. For transportation? I don't know what's wrong with my mic. But these are a nurse, which is either an RN. They provide services while we provide transportation to preschoolers with special needs to and from school.
So it's a nurse rides on the bus, basically?
Yes.
Okay. $200,000.
That's to 2023. That's, yep. Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Resolution 254, approving the execution of a contract for $200,000 with Unlimited Care for a preschool nurse attendant, same as 253, but with a different provider. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion.
Why do we have two different providers doing the same thing?
They provide these services to several youth throughout the county, and just depending on the location and also the needs of each child may need a slightly different specialized nurse. But, you know, there's many of these. We transport many children with special needs throughout the county to different schools. And so there's oftentimes a bus on each, or a nurse on each of these buses. So
so one company doesn't do it all. I'm just surprised that you would contract it out to several different companies.
I think if the company is unable to provide what the needs are, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, so if Unlimited Care is able to provide, you know, what they're looking for, then I'm sure that's why they contract with
specific to the child that has that, whatever issues he has.
Just a quick question. Is this billed up to $200,000? It's only billable hours, and the max is that total max that we're
looking. I think they bill us $44 an hour.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Resolution 255, approving the execution of a contract for $159,176 with Liberty Resources for a trauma trauma specialist care manager. Motion.
I'll move it.
And a second. All right, discussion.
Trauma care, I'm going to ask the questions. Trauma care manager?
Yeah, so they work with children. They assess the needs of the family and the child as far as whether they're able to stabilize the children in the home. They do referrals. They arrange for transportation assistance where needed. They make weekly.
Is this what the bus will do?
No. No, I mean, that's a different, that's a nurse on the bus. This is a case manager that works with the families and the children.
Were you referring to the mobile child advocacy center?
Yes. Yes, that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, I mean, so that is literally doing an investigation of the law enforcement type where we have to interview children that are victims of domestic violence and family violence. That's totally separate. And again, this is a case manager. This is a social worker working with a traumatized child.
I'm not against it. But I'm seeing the layer on the layer on top of the layer, what Michael was talking about. It seems like there's so many people doing the same job and we're spending so much money in so many different directions that I feel sorry for like Barbara was saying, I can see how difficult it could be to navigate it all because we have just here in these few resolutions, we have duplicity over and over again that we need. I'm not saying we don't, but yeah, I think definitely this whole system needs to be streamlined.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be more traumatizing to be interviewed by a police officer than be interviewed by caseworkers at social services. And now we're adding in a trauma. That would be traumatizing. You know, we have to talk to these scary adults that they've, you know, have no relationship with. I think we could better spend our money.
I think that task force has got a lot of work to do.
Do we know the details of the trauma specialist care manager? You know, is it's I would doubt that it's a uniformed police officer, right? It's somebody who
the contracts are apples and oranges. These are totally different services, totally different children. They're not at all the same.
It's a case though. If there's a child victim, you would have an officer and then you would have somebody from DSS and now you have a mental health provider.
It's not necessarily, these children have had some trauma and they're in family court, but they're not necessarily, again, the same children that have gone through abuse or family violence. These are just, they've gone through a traumatic situation that they have a family assessment service plan through family court, and this is their caseworker.
Trauma nurse is a caseworker, is what you're saying? Did I get that correctly?
These are trauma specialist case managers. These are not nurses.
It's not a nurse.
These people are really advocates for the family and the child. They're seen as the people that are supporting them. The system has its, you know, it has a police officer, it has a DSS worker, but this is a person that's been trained and very sensitive to the needs of the family and the children. They're trained in trauma-informed care. This is a formal training. We do it for every caseworker that we have. It's very important that people be sensitive to the damage and how it's impacting upon them. I think that's what this worker does, and I see them more as an advocate for the child and the family than as part of the system.
And this is a voluntary program or is it mandated? So on top of, say, you know, the caseworkers and the law enforcement and whatever mental health provider the family may choose, they're be mandated to deal with this trauma nurse?
oftentimes in family court, it's part of a plan. So in that way, it would be a mandate. But as Michael said, they're advocates for the family. They try to get the family in services that they're working for the child and for the family.
After the DSS worker and the police officer deals with the family, this is the person that works with them to get help for the family, to get counseling for the child, to make sure that it's not lost in the system. It really is a different role than the role played by the police or by the formal Department of Social Services.
So is this possible, just so I can understand this completely, is it possible that one instance, one particular child or family who has a crisis, whatever it may be, from what I've heard, they could have two or three different caseworkers working on the same case.
Yeah.
And that seems almost bizarre.
But think about it in a little different way. The police officer has the responsibility to determine what happened and was there a crime and does somebody have to...
I'm not talking about the police department.
But I'm not talking about the police department. That's going to work with the family on an ongoing basis afterward to try and help them heal. I don't see it as the same function. I really don't.
No, I wasn't referring to the police department. That's not what I was referring to. And I understand that part. I'm just saying, because it just seems like there's like this caseworker is specialized in this, and this caseworker is specialized in that, and this caseworker. So we have like two, three, or four, whatever number of caseworkers working with one child. Now, that one child, talk about being confused. I understand what Barbara was saying before. I mean, you get so tired of it, you just walk away from it. You know, I just seems layer upon bureaucracy to the I'm sorry, but I just see what an incredible waste of money we have in the mental health system. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I think you can get one person who's got a doctorate that can handle all of those things. It just seems bizarre to spend that much money on so many different caseworkers working with one child in a crisis. Maybe I'm wrong. I really do this. Trust me, this I'm very passionate about this committee and about the work that it does and family. I think they do incredible work, and I'm just trying to. But it's broken, the system. So, I mean, we're never going to fix the system if we keep adding layer on top of layer. And that's what I think we're doing. I'm not going to vote against this because it's already part in motion. But I think we really need to take a hard look at this mess because I think it's a mess. I really do. Sorry.
Just for the record, these last three or four resolutions have all been DSS resolutions, not mental health resolutions. They're not related to the mental health system, that they're the social services company.
Sounds like it should be one and the same, though.
Yeah.
It
at face value, it does, Mark. I mean, I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm just looking at it. You know, it just you got to see the layers that we're seeing.
They work together. They're integrated, and they definitely, you know, there's pieces that come together, but they have separate and apart functions. So.
Okay.
I mean, my daughter was in two programs where she worked with Child Protective Services. One was voluntary, the other was mandated. The voluntary one worked much nicer because when they're mandated, you don't want that person in your house as a general rule. And they used to have to go in pairs because it was too dangerous in most cases for a caseworker to go in by themselves. So I and that was just a temporary program. I don't think they're functioning anymore. You know, and it was someone going in, and they called her a teacher, which I guess was a nice way of saying that she made suggestions and did some evaluation of where the kid should be going. So yes, that program was an additional layer. I don't know how I feel about this. I'd rather take the money and, you know, give it to Michael for another caseworker.
That's a lot of money.
Okay. All right. Anybody else? All right. All in favor?
Aye. I'm going to go with an aye. I'm going to say yeah. trepidation.
Any opposed?
I'll be opposed to this until I can wrap my head around it. Not that I'm opposed to any programs that help families, but there's so many separate programs out there, you know, and especially after Barbara Hill's presentation about, you know, integrated healthcare system. You know, I really think we should be looking at fixing it instead of putting duct tape on it.
Honestly, you know what? I'm going to agree with Legislator Petit on this one as well. I think we really need to take a better look at that. And at this point, I'm going to be a no.
Still passed.
It's too much.
All right. So, all right, good. Well, then the votes were recorded, Annie?
Yes.
All right. It still passes. Still passes. Okay. All right. We will move on to Resolution 256. So, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $20,956 with people to reduce funding. Oh, this is with people. Okay. To reduce funding HRMT guidance and support services. Motion?
I'll move it.
Second. Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, favor? Aye.
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 Final resolution 257, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $368,450 with the trustees of Columbia University, providing funding for the Healing Communities Grant. I'll move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
All right. Any discussion?
Healing, this grant is for what, Mark? How does this work?
This is our opioid that study that we've done with Columbia University. This is the third year of the, we're receiving the money.
That's what I thought. Just making sure.
Yep. It's 100% federal.
Yep.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everybody. I got to run.
Yep. Sure. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Take care.
All right, we will move on to new business. And I'm sorry?
I have new, or was, oh, the legislative parody is making the presentation on the resolution? No?
Right, well,
no,
this is...
Yeah, this.
We've invited Michael Berg of Family of Woodstock to join us.
So I want to give him an opportunity.
Say that again.
Michael Berg is with it. Yep. So, he was under new business. So I wanted to give him an opportunity.
Yeah, and Laura, I'm here just because I'm interested in this issue for a long, long time. And I come about it from a little different position where many of you folks are involved for a variety of reasons. The job I have had and being a father and a grandfather and an uncle and all those good things put me in a position to, because of my job, of seeing things that happen and seeing changes that can happen in a day. And I have some issues, but I'm not here to shill for anything. I just want to know what's going on. And as my time runs out in this place, I'll do what I got to try to do. But that's the only reason I'm here.
Okay. Well, it's nice to see you.
Thank you.
It's always nice to see
you. All right, Michael, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, I guess the background to this is that we were asked how much money it would cost to raise our salary so that the baseline for any worker would be $15 an hour. And my finance person did a calculation and came up with something in the neighborhood of $779,000. And I guess that surprised the legislature. And so I'm here to try and explain that. And I have to start by saying that FAMHSA does a lot of good things, but one of the things that we don't do well is we don't advertise. People come to us, we have tremendous numbers, but we don't take that much credit in the community as perhaps we should, and my board is actually looking at that. Family runs what we count as 22 major programs. I'm talking about things like shelters, the longest running hotline in the country, the walk-in centers in Woodstock, New Paltz, and Ellenville, and our huge activity in Kingston now. We have taken it as our mantra to start with, we respond to the way that the community asks for service. And so we've always started with a very rudimentary program. I mean, the first homeless shelter that we ran was the living room floor of somebody that we had housed in our houses, who came back and said, I found an apartment. There's no shelters in this county. Pay half my rent. I'll give you my living room floor. And for 6 months, that was the homeless shelter in this county before we opened one. And how we've built our programs is to listen to the people that we're serving. So in 1978, if you came into Family of Woodstock at 9:45 at night, you would find that the place was filled with women and children. And we really didn't understand that at first. That was our introduction to domestic violence. And so we opened a shelter, and for the first 3 years, we were over capacity every night until shelters in the other communities opened. And from that, we built programming. But I wanted the county to know, and I sent you some information that I thought would be relevant to the committee's knowledge. I sent you two summaries of services that we provide. These are just the top line of those services. But I sent you 2020 and I sent you 2019 because I thought the committee might be interested in what the difference in the COVID year from the previous year was. I also sent you an analysis of our budget, listing all of our revenues. And what it says is that we run an $11,900,000 programming for those 22 programs. Over $10 million of it is money that we're bringing into the county that would not be in the county otherwise. With the exception of the money that largely the county puts in to match money that it is required to, all of the rest of the money we are bringing in, whether it's through fundraising, foundations, grant writing, and that's how we build programming. So the other thing that I said, which I find interesting and I wanted people to understand, we came to Kingston late. We opened Family of Woodstock in 70 and Ellenville and New Paltz in 75 as the county asked us to put tie lines in from Kerhonkson and New Paltz so that we would be toll-free countywide. And for those that don't understand, in 1970, Saugerties was a long-distance call from Woodstock. So in 71, when McCarthy put two tie lines in from Kingston, it was because Kingston was free to the entire northern region of the county. But calling Phoenicia was a long-distance call. And so we wanted people to be able to call us. I just want to say that the Woodstock, New Paltz, and Ellenville offices are the main deliverers of human services. And when Barbara was talking about the social determinants of health, that's exactly what we're about. But understand that we realized early on that people wouldn't just come to total strangers to tell them that they're being abused by their husband, or that they're being sexually abused by their brother. They would test us. So we give people a lot of ways to test us. They can come in and use our phone. They can use our food pantry. They can They can look at our employment board. These are all ways that people can test us to see if it's safe to reveal what's really happening in their lives. And so that's the way that we built the programs. They're very significant and they do a huge amount of service. The county is 14% of our overall programming, but it's only 6% of our walk-in centers, the three that are not in Kingston. And those centers have a fundraising goal of $314,000. It's a huge lift for us. So I would hope that the county would see these outlying posts as the real deliverers of a lot of mental health services and other services. Right now, all of those offices are taking people in and helping them to get rental assistance reimbursement, utility assistance reimbursement. If they weren't local, the people wouldn't get that help. I would answer any questions, and I would also ask Cave if there's something that he wanted me to cover that I haven't.
Yeah, I would just, you know, Michael, if you could speak to the impact of you know, the living wage, what the living wage impact would be more specifically, because I realize it's not only on the employees that fall into that category, but potentially more broadly.
Well, I mean, think about it for a minute, and I'm embarrassed to say this. We employ people that do the overnight and weekends on the shelters. They deal with maybe one other person as support. We sometimes they've had to dispense Narcan and try and revive people that they found dead in the bathroom. I'm paying them $13 an hour. McDonald's pays $15.40. I can't just raise that position. So it's a lift of the entire agency. We realize and we know that we've underpaid people for a long time. And I have to say, you know, I was at a meeting with the head of mental health and she happened to say, well, I started my career at Family and half of the leaders in the room acknowledged that they had as well. So what happens is people come to us, we train them, and then they go on to other county and private agencies that pay better. Feels terrible, but we're doing everything that we can.
Michael, first of all, I want to say thank you. You don't remember me, but I remember you. I was, I'm going to say 18, 19 years old in Saugerties, a skinny little kid that was about this big around then. And I was into doing sound work and lighting, and you came to me. You needed, I believe it was a sound system for one of the programs that you were going to do. And it was because you had a women's shelter you were opening up. And this is back in the late 70s. Right. It was just a program. And I remember I provided a speaker and an amp and a couple of mics for you to talk to whatever it was. And here we are 40 some years later and you're still doing it. So first of all, I can't thank you enough for everything, because throughout those 40 years, I know, and I'm not even going to put a number on it, multiple people that have benefited from Family of Woodstock and from your services, from your shelters, from everything that you guys do. And to think that you have employees that are working there at $10, $12, $13 an hour, and the work that you guys do is abhorrent. I will absolutely, without question, and with a smile on my face, approve any kind of funding to make sure that you get that money you need. Because there's not another agency in Ulster County that does the same work that you do. And personally, as a man, as a resident of Saugerties, and as a legislator, cannot thank you enough. And I will be there to support you any way we can, period.
John?
Yes, Mr. Berg, thank you. You know, I have asked four times, not to you, Mr. Berg, to others, to give me a list of, because I've heard this $700,000, $750,000 personally. That's less than 1/3 of 1% of our total budget. We cannot afford not to do this.
Exactly.
We cannot afford not to do it. But my question is, if I can, I've asked for job descriptions, job titles, not names, of the positions. So I, in my own feeble mind, can evaluate it to see if even that that figure that you presented is accurate. And I'm saying that with respect, just so I could look at the numbers. I mean, I don't know how many folks you have, 100, 180, 200.
I don't. 188 staff.
About how many?
188.
100. And so you're not including your volunteers in this?
No, we have 300 or more volunteers.
Because right. I saw that in the information that Nettie sent out today. Now, if you need this much to bring those folks up to a living wage, then we are really behind the times. You and other people who help people in need, people with special needs, people who are just sick or infirmed. And the figure that I hear doesn't scare me one iota. Ulster County can afford it, and Ulster County cannot afford not to do it. And I, when you say it could, we're not talking about you bankrupting your budget. We're talking about us making sure that you get it so that your folks can be proud of their job. And, you know, the ironic part about it is any of the raises are going to come right back into the community anyway.
Absolutely.
Whether they be at the food market or wherever. So, you know, that's fine. Thank you very much. I just wanted to make sure, though, that, you know, when I was suggested come here, and I've been very interested. I can go back to 2013 with my sons and I were working on mental health issues in the schools, and we were turned down. There's a law on the books, local law number one of 2013, to start addressing these. And as I said before, not to be cavalier about it, but on my way out, you're going to hear from me, and then we'll go where we have to go. So thanks for letting me sit on, Craig or Mr. Chairman. Thank you for letting me sit here and listen. I know it's a devilish job. I see it out here where I'm going to go in a few minutes. I don't know if you know what my job is, Mr. Berg, but I run my kids call it a restaurant. Some of my enemies call it a gin mill, but I see it all the time, and I'm interested in it, thank God, not because I have a problem in my family that I know of, but because I see it.
Absolutely.
And I thank you and the committee, and I'm going to go to work now.
John, I would like to say that I would be happy to give you what you asked for in terms of the staffing of the programs. And I also would tell you how long people have stayed with us. Even though we have terrible salaries, they're committed to the work.
And one way that you reward people, sadly, is money. But it's part of the deal. So thank you all for letting me come. I do have to go to work.
You got it. Thanks, John.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for being here, John. Mm-hmm.
And thank you, Michael, as well. You know, you're obviously an amazing advocate for the people that you obviously care about, and you're a believer in what you do. And you know, it would be beyond me not to bring your passionate plea to my caucus and have that discussion with them as well. So, thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm available if any of the material that I sent out is unclear or you have some questions about it. John wanted some salary information. I'm happy to give anybody that has questions what I can of answers. And thank you, Abe, and thank you for the committee for giving us this opportunity. It feels really good to be acknowledged.
You got it.
Thank you, Michael.
You got my full support. Absolutely. Thanks, Abe, for bringing him here.
All righty.
Good night.
We have one more thing on the agenda here, and that's potential discussion on local number 2 of 2013. This was brought up last night at the law enforcenment. It discussed an opportunity to use some of the rescue plan to address the opioid epidemic as a matter of public safety, and more specifically to do it within the county school districts. I don't know if anybody had a chance to look at it. Yeah, I glimpsed, but I didn't catch all the details. I also know that school districts get a little funny about us, you know, poking our nose into things like this. So I'm interested to hear the thoughts of the committee, regarding this. So I don't know if anybody has any comments.
I think as a committee and as a county, it's I don't care if the school districts get funny about it. We need to stop the epidemic.
Sure.
And we need, you know what, we need to start working together with people, with the school districts to try to put an end to it. Because honestly, the biggest portion of these, if you look at the statistics, start in the school. That's where it starts. And that's where we need to stop it from. And I don't see why that should be an issue.
No, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And not that I'm hesitant to do it. They just have to go about it in a different way where we can bring everybody in and have that discussion and work toward a common goal. That's all.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, we need to, you know, communication is the biggest key. And I think as our committee and as a county, you know, if we, you know, we hold roundtable talks, as it were, with schools, with not only the school board, but with the people around the ground. So in a lot of ways, the school boards, and I'm not saying any particular school board, because we have enough of them, are actually disconnected from the students that are on the ground. And I think that's what we need to keep that in mind, too, when we bring these programs forward.
Sure.
Actually work with teachers and the principals that are in the buildings, and, you know, get a coalition of them who actually have the hands on. And, you know, whether it be the SROs or whatever, so to get and help them with their tools that they need.
Yep.
Before they end up in the restorative justice system.
Exactly. Exactly, Laura.
Yep. So, okay. Well, if
I have one.
Yes. Yep, sure.
It's child support. I've gotten several phone calls about it being virtually impossible to get in touch with the child support unit, and that more money than the non-custodial parent owed has been taken, and in some cases as long as a year. I tried myself and I couldn't get through. It ended up at a voicemail that says, do not leave messages here, and then it said the box was filled. So I did forward an email to Director Iaposi, who got Wendy Rick, the senior counsel, in touch, and she proceeded to send me authorization forms. Now, these authorization forms give me access to all of these individuals' personal information, and that's not what I was looking for. Surprisingly, they willingly signed it over, stating that maybe I would have better luck. You know, but we have cases where these non-custodial fathers have overpaid $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. And yet when the accounts are looked at, the account that the child support goes into, they're empty, which means somebody's getting the fund. I'm going to keep working on this. They offered to have a Zoom meeting with me and their legal counsel. You know, again, I'm not sure why I need all their personal information, but, you know, I mean, talk about mental health issues. When you have a father who's got $1,300 coming out of an $1,800 paycheck every 2 weeks, because he says, I make really good money, but I just don't get any of it. And he has to live on $250 a week. There's issues. So
I find it interesting that you said that they want to set up a meeting with their lawyers.
Yes.
To be honest with you, that's the first thing that set off my red flag. It's like, why do you need a lawyer?
I know. It sounds like another department we're having problems with. But I'm trying to follow the money here. And none of these non-custodial parents have declared they don't owe money. You know what I mean? That they don't want to pay it. They want to take care of their kids. So that is not the issue. The issue is when they work a second job to make up for the money that's being taken. And then because we contract out for this service, the same amount of money is taken out of their secondary paycheck too. So now they're paying twice as much. It's a little broken. I've already talked to March Gallagher about it. I'm not sure if we need, you know, an audit on this as well. Not that she has time, but if you looked at the audit for the restitution report, that was bad.
Yeah.
So that's kind it. Of, update kind you.
Kind of the theme of the night, you know, navigating a broken system. Yeah. And to your point that you just made, it's just another instance where, you know, people are getting lost and nobody's getting any answers. So if you can keep us in the loop, you know, follow up with the committee, let us know okay. what you found out. And then, you know, when and if you speak to Commissioner Iacocci, you know, I appreciate it if you can follow up with me on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. And with that said, I know the Environmental Committee is waiting. So maybe we can, if anybody.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Right, really appreciate it.
Barbara, thank you.
Make that thanks motion.
Thanks for your call second. Today, Craig. Second. That was second. Really nice.
Second.
Thank you.
You got it, Barbara. All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Take care, guys.
All right. Take care, everyone. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Abe.